Test 1, 2.
Within the next week or two for those plans, for building permit.
Yeah, that's what we wanted.
Oh.
Speakers are talking, chattering.
I'd like to call this meeting of the Carson City Historic Resources Commission for Thursday, January 14th, 2010 to order, beginning with determination of quorum.
Chairperson Drews.
Here.
Vice Chairperson Darney.
Here.
Commissioner Bass.
Present.
Commissioner Hayes.
Here.
Commissioner Lopiccolo.
Here.
Commissioner Osa.
Here.
Commissioner Spolda. Quorum is present.
Next action is B, approval of minutes. We've got minutes from November 12th and December 10th, 2009. I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Motion and second.
Second.
Any questions? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Minutes are approved. Next item is C, modification of agenda. This is the tentative schedule for the meeting. The Historic Resources Commission reserves the right to take items in a different order to accomplish business in the most efficient manner. Jen?
Mr. Chairman, we have no changes to the agenda.
Commission members?
I'm just wondering if we shouldn't flip one and two.
I think we have to do one first to start the new year with a new chairman and vice chair. D, disclosures. Any members of the commission that may wish to explain any contact with the public regarding an item on the agenda or business of the commission. Are there any commission member disclosures? Did meet with Joe McCarthy and Jennifer Went in December for the December board meeting on item number 3. Next item is E, public comments. Members of the public who wish to address the commission may speak on matters related to the Historic Resources Commission. Comments are limited to 3 minutes per person. If your item requires extended discussion, please request the chairman to calendar the matter for a future meeting. No action may be taken on a matter raised under this item of the agenda till the matter itself has been specifically included on an agenda as an item upon which action may be taken. Is there any public comment on non-agendized items? Hearing none, we'll move to F, public hearing matters. F1, HRC-09-106. Are these 09s or 10s? Should these be 10s?
They're actually 09s.
Action to elect Historic Resources Commission Chairman and Vice Chairman for the period February 10th, 2010 to January 2011. Jen.
Mr. Chairman, as you noted in the HRC bylaws, the first action of every year from this commission is to elect a chairman and a vice chairman. We've included information in your packet, and as you noted, this has to be the first item of action that you take every year.
Thank you, Jen. I will call for nominations for chairman.
I nominate Mike Drew as chairman.
I'll second.
Nomination and a second. Are there any other nominations?
I'll nominate Robert Darney for vice chairperson.
Let's do chair first, and then we'll do vice chair.
Go. Easy, hold
Greg.
That one.
Easy, Greg. Any hold other any other nominations for chairman? All. Rob got scared from there because he heard his name.
That would be fun. Duke it out. See.
Are there any other nominations for chairman? Nominations are closed. I guess there's only one nomination. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We'll now open nominations for vice chair.
Okay, now I'll nominate Robert Darney for vice chair.
And I will second that motion.
You've got a motion and a second. Any other motions? Nominations are closed. All in favor of Rob for vice chair?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion carries. Congratulations again.
Yeah.
You.
Next item is F2, HRC-09-104. Action to consider request from St. Peter's Episcopal Church, property owner Episcopal Diocese of Nevada, to allow a non-internally illuminated double-faced sign approximately 24 square feet on property zoned residential office, RO, located at 300 North Division Street, APN 003-201-01. Jen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Jennifer Pruitt, Planning Division. The subject site is located north of Proctor Street, south of Telegraph, west of Division, and east of Minnesota. And at this time, the applicant is requesting to replace an existing sign. As you can see, it's located in the corner of the northeastern corner of the site. And they're requesting to remove that sign and to locate a new signage on site, which will be a wooden sign, approximately 24 square feet in size, non-internally illuminated, made out of wood. And they are proposing the posts to the steel posts painted to look like wood. That's the information that's been provided by the applicants. I would like to note that we have included the appropriate development standards, specifically 4.4.7, as well as 5.23, and the proposed signage is in keeping with the code requirements regarding height as well as size. So there's no issues regarding planning issues or size issues regarding the signage that's proposed. And I know that the applicants are here today. If you have any questions of them, and staff is recommending approval of the signage that's before you today.
Thank you, Jen. Hallie, Steve, do you want to come up and answer any questions the board has?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Hallie Murphy. Thank you for having us here tonight. In the packet, I don't know if you got to see the picture of the old sign that we're replacing. There you go. Okay. This sign has seen better days, and we feel it's time to get a new sign up to better represent who we are and to better claim our place in the center of the historic district. So I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
Commission member questions, comments?
I think it's a nice looking design for the new sign.
What are you just going to have? This is more. Is Steve going to do your sign?
Yes.
Can we get Steve up here?
Yes, Mr. Ralph.
So what are your brackets going to look like that hook the is the sign wood, for starters, painted?
Yeah, the sign is wood painted.
And then you'll do the
internal brackets. So that
just little guys or
yeah.
Nothing ornamental? Okay. I like it.
Any other questions? Wooden post, Steve?
No, we steel. Do metal post.
Steel, okay. Any other questions or comments?
I think it's a wonderful design.
Is there any public comment? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion. I move to approve HRC-09-104, request from St. Peter's Episcopal Church, property owner, Episcopal Diocese of Nevada, to allow non-internally illuminated double-faced sign, 24 square feet, property zoned residential office at 300 North Division, APN 003-201-01, and subject to the conditions of approval in the staff report, and there is 12 conditions of approval.
I'll second that motion.
Motion and a second. Have you reviewed the conditions, Ellie?
Yes.
And you accept them?
Yes.
Have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thanks. Motion carries. Thank you very much. Looks great.
Yeah.
Thank you. We'll be back.
Good. That was the easy one.
Next item is F3, HRC-09-100, presentation by the Office of Business Development staff regarding the Carson City Nugget Development Project. You want to introduce it, Jen, and we'll get Joe up here.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Joe McCarthy is here today from the Office of Business Development to provide an overview of the Carson City Nugget Development Project, and he will go through the project in great detail, but still a glimpse of the project in general. One of the items that I would like to note on the record is that the project is not in the historic district. However, Mr. McCarthy has been basically meeting with all the departments here in Carson City, all of the commissions and committees regarding this project to make sure everyone's aware of the project. And if they have any questions, he'll be able to address those. But it's important for everyone to know that the project is not in the historic district, but he's here to provide you with an overview of the project in general. So with that,
okay. Jen, Joe?
And Jen, can you see if you can get my PowerPoint up? Okay, so it the PowerPoint is the guidepost for an Irishman. I never follow the PowerPoint. Members of the Historic Commission and anybody else who's interested in historic preservation in this community, and our history, I'm here to ask your help more than anything else. I'll go over the project with you and answer a lot of questions, or any and all of the questions, as best I can, or I'll get back to you if I don't have the answer. But I'm really here to engage your interest and your support and maybe your partnership in making sure that the site that this project is proposed to be developed, we take advantage of our history. We look at the site. We do an assessment of the site. We take a look at the types of uses that were on the site throughout the history of this community and see if we can work with the design team from the private sector to make sure that we celebrate what was on that site. And, you know, Mike and I just threw out a couple of ideas. I mean, maybe an interpretive trail within the site, something on that nature, maybe the type of signage and or historic markers that indicate what occurred on the site. But there will be federal dollars in this project, and so there will be some obligations and requirements, and I think Mike can speak to that a lot better than I can, relative to doing an historic assessment and making sure that we do the right thing. So we want to be out in front on this, and we want to help the architects and the design professionals that will land on the site and look at the various uses and make sure that they do the right thing on behalf of our community. So that being said, we call it the Nugget Economic Development Project, and the reason why the Nugget is in there, because that's pretty obvious. It's on 8 acres, approximately 8 acres of cracked concrete and sidewalk and streets.
So what are your brackets going to look like that hook is the sign wood, for starters, painted?
Yeah, the sign is wood painted.
And then you'll do the
brackets,
just little guys or
yeah.
Nothing ornamental? Okay. I like it.
Any other questions? Wooden post, Steve?
No, we're steel. Post.
Steel, okay. Any other questions or comments?
I think it's a wonderful design.
Is there any public comment? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion. I move to approve HRC-09-104, request from St. Peter's Episcopal Church, property owner, Episcopal Diocese of Nevada, to allow non-internally illuminated double-faced sign, 24 square feet, property zoned residential office at 300 North Division, APN 003-201-01, and subject to the conditions of approval in the staff report, and there is 12 conditions of approval.
I'll second that motion.
Motion and a second. Have you reviewed the conditions, Hallie?
Yes.
And you accept them?
Yes.
Have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thanks. Motion carries. Thank you very much. Looks great.
Yeah.
Thank you. We'll be back.
Good. That was the easy one.
Next item is F3, HRC-09-100, presentation by the Office of Business Development staff regarding the Carson City Nugget Development Project. You want to introduce it, Jen, and we'll get Joe up here.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Joe McCarthy is here today from the Office of Business Development to provide an overview of the Carson City Nugget Development Project, and he will go through the project in great detail, but still a glimpse of the project in general. One of the items that I would like to note on the record is that the project is not in the historic district. However, Mr. McCarthy has been basically meeting with all the departments here in Carson City, all the commissions and committees regarding this project to make sure everyone's aware of the project. And if they have any questions, he'll be able to address those. But it's important for everyone to know that the project is not in the historic district, but he's here to provide you with an overview of the project in general. So with that.
Okay.
And Jen, can you see if you can get my PowerPoint up? Okay, so it the PowerPoint is the guidepost for an Irishman. I never follow the PowerPoint. Members of the Historic Commission and anybody else who's interested in historic preservation in this community, and our history, I'm here to ask your help more than anything else. I'll go over the project with you and answer a lot of questions, or any and all of the questions, as best I can, or I'll get back to you if I don't have the answer. But I'm really here to engage your interest and your support and maybe your partnership in making sure that the site that this project is proposed to be developed, we take advantage of our history. We look at the site. We do an assessment of the site. Take a look at the types of uses that were on the site throughout the history of this community and see if we can work with the design team from the private sector to make sure that we celebrate what was on that site. And, you know, Mike and I just threw out a couple of ideas. I mean, maybe an interpretive trail within the site, something on that nature, maybe the type of signage and or historic markers that indicate what occurred on the site. But there will be federal dollars in this project, and so there will be some obligations and requirements, and I think Mike can speak to that a lot better than I can, relative to doing an historic assessment and making sure that we do the right thing. So we want to be out in front on this, and we want to help the architects and the design professionals that will land on the site and look at the various uses and make sure that they do the right thing on behalf of our community. So that being said, we call it the Nugget Economic Development Project, and the reason why the Nugget is in there, because that's pretty obvious. It's on 8 acres, approximately 8 acres of cracked concrete and sidewalk and streets in that is adjacency to the current Carson Nugget Casino. And part of why we think it's an economic development project will be pretty apparent when you see the type of uses that are proposed. But before we even get into describing why this project went forward, recognize that there's a lot of things that have happened in the Nugget over the last couple of years that are very positive for our community. And we can see it in visual form, in the visceral form of their support for downtown ice rink, their support of various nonprofits. They're reaching out to Convention and Visitors Bureau and helping with their activities. We have a real new Nugget in town. And it was about 2.5 to 3 years ago that I was a very happy economic developer for the community because I thought I'd scored a good one. I was working with the current owners, or the owners of the at the time, and they had asked me for some advice as to what kind of development team would help them bring a lodging property and possibly other uses to the site. And so I sent them in the direction of a number of developers. They chose a company out of Columbus, Ohio, and I made a presentation in front of them. And this company out of Columbus, Ohio, was going to bring a standard hotel and possibly some conference space to the site. And the owners of the casino were also looking at some other mixed uses, a mixed-use parking garage and the potential of attracting other private investment. And I was tickled pink because I thought maybe we had scored a really good project for downtown that was going to be really very catalytic, and it was going to be great to see the upgrade of the Nugget and transformation of those that 8 acres. And then I got a visit into my office by a gentleman named Steve Neighbors, and that was about 2 months after I had made this presentation. And Steve was in town. He had been his services had been engaged by the ownership that didn't live in the state, what we call the Idaho side of the Carson Nugget. And the Idaho side of the Carson Nugget had 50% control of the property. We all know that the Nugget has a very interesting history. It was built, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that the guiding light for the initial construction of the Nugget was Dick Graves. Dick was instrumental in a number of Nugget projects throughout the state, and Hop and Harold Adams were from Idaho. They had tried gaming in Las Vegas, and they had come up to Carson City and purchased the Nugget in the 1960s and operated it for 50 years as a family operation. Both Hop and Harold passed away. The Idaho side, what was left on the Idaho side, was Hop's wife, May, and his daughter, Betty Jean, or Betsy, as the family knew. We know the Tatro family were very instrumental in the management of that facility for many years, and there were quite a few other local families that helped in the management, and, of course, a lot of people worked in the Nugget over the years. And so Hobbs passed away, Harold's passed away. What was left of the family was the heirs, essentially. And so this gentleman, Steve Neighbors, comes in, and he was engaged by the Idaho side, which was May Adams, who was very elderly. She was in her late 80s at the time, and Betsy was in her middle to late 60s. And he came down to find out what the Nevada boys were up to because they weren't communicating very well. I didn't know Steve from a hole in the ground, but he was a very engaging fellow when we first started talking to him. And I sent him over to the family attorney, the law firm of Andy McKenzie's law firm, and he started to do some analysis. And pretty soon he was able to tell, just looking at the books of the Nugget, that this kind of venture was problematic. and was putting the ownership at risk. And so he continued to communicate with the owners of the Nugget on both sides and essentially put the kibosh on this particular project for the time being, and needed to get the Nugget back into a profit position where it was a successful entity and not being threatened by overreaching in a larger project. And Steve then proceeded to work with both parties to improve the Nugget. And a lot of you have been in the Nugget since in the last number of years. You've seen a much nicer facility. It's now in a profit position, not great, but it's doing okay. That has adjacency to the current Carson Nugget Casino. And part of why we think it's an economic development project will be pretty apparent when you see the type of uses that are proposed. But before we even get into describing why this project went forward, recognize that there's a lot of things that have happened in the Nugget over the last couple of years that are very positive for our community. And we can see it in visual form, in the visceral form of their support for downtown ice rink, their support of various nonprofits. They're reaching out to Convention and Visitors Bureau and helping with their activities. We have a real new Nugget in town. And it was about 2.5 to 3 years ago that I was a very happy economic developer for the community because I thought I'd scored a good one. I was working with the current owners or the owners of the at the time, and they had asked me for some advice as to what kind of development team would help them bring a lodging property and possibly other uses to the site. And so I sent them in the direction of a number of developers. They chose a company out of Columbus, Ohio, and I made a presentation in front of them. And this company out of Columbus, Ohio, was going to bring a standard hotel and possibly some conference space to the site. And the owners of the casino were also looking at some other mixed uses, a mixed-use parking garage and the potential of attracting other private investment. And I was tickled pink because I thought maybe we had scored a really good project for downtown that was going to be really very catalytic, and it was going to be great to see the upgrade of the Nugget and transformation of those that 8 acres. And then I got a visit into my office by a gentleman named Steve Neighbors, and that was about 2 months after I had made this presentation. And Steve was in town. He had been his services had been engaged by the ownership that didn't live in the state, what we call the Idaho side of the Carson Nugget. And the Idaho side of the Carson Nugget had 50% control of the property. We all know that the Nugget has a very interesting history. It was built, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that the guiding light for the initial construction of the Nugget was Dick Graves. Dick was instrumental in a number of Nugget projects throughout the state, and Hop and Harold Adams were from Idaho. They had tried gaming in Las Vegas, and they had come up to Carson City and purchased the Nugget in the 1960s and operated it for 50 years as a family operation. Both Hop and Harold passed away. The Idaho side, what was left on the Idaho side, was Hop's wife, May, and his daughter, Betty Jean, or Betsy, as the family knew them. We know the Tatro family were very instrumental in the management of that facility for many years, and there were quite a few other local families that helped in the management, and of course a lot of people worked in the Nugget over the years. And so Hobbs passed away, Harold's passed away. What was left of the family was the heirs, essentially. And so this gentleman, Steve Neighbors, comes in, and he was engaged by the Idaho side, which was May Adams, who was very elderly. She was in her late 80s at the time, and Betsy was in her middle to late 60s. And he came down to find out what the Nevada boys were up to, because they weren't communicating very well. And I didn't know Steve from a hole in the ground, but he was a very engaging fellow when we first started talking to him. And I sent him over to the family attorney, the law firm of Annie McKenzie's law firm, and he started to do some analysis. And pretty soon he was able to tell, just looking at the books of the Nugget, that this kind of venture was problematic. and was putting the ownership at risk. And so he continued to communicate with the owners of the Nugget on both sides and essentially put the kibosh on this particular project for the time being, and needed to get the Nugget back into a profit position where it was a successful entity and not being threatened by overreaching in a larger project. And Steve then proceeded to work with both parties to improve the Nugget. And a lot of you have been in the Nugget since in the last number of years. You've seen a much nicer facility. It's now in a profit position, not great, but it's doing okay. It's got a piece of a little bit bigger piece of the gaming pie, but enough of it to at least be sustainable as a business. Steve's background. He really made an eloquent presentation to the Board of Supervisors last Thursday. I don't know if any of you got to watch it, but he talked in terms of how he was only for a few months when he was 11 years old, a resident of our children's home. And he spent time on the street as well as trying to try to protect himself in his preteen and teenage years. But by the time he was 15, he had formed his own business. He was working for some casino entities up in Sparks. He was cleaning their sidewalks. And by the time he was 17, he was a recipient of a $10,000 direct loan from the Small Business Administration to start his first business. He wasn't old enough to be able to draw down or open up a bank account to have a business at that point, so he had to have a partner. By the time he was 25, Inc. magazine was recognizing him as one of the top entrepreneurs in the West, and he has started 14 businesses in his lifetime, all of them still operational. He formed a turnaround business, turnaround specialty business in his early 40s, and has been instrumental in turning around small to mid-sized, mostly manufacturing and technology firms throughout the country, helping them to reinvigorate their business and stay afloat. And he has a success ratio pretty high. He's got a master's of business administration now. He's also a fellow at Harvard and MIT, and fairly well recognized in the business turnaround arena. He had no interest in this project whatsoever other than to do a favor for a family friend. But it's interesting. Steve laid out his particular philosophy as a turnaround specialist, and he calls it a stakeholder philosophy. And the stakeholder philosophy is that businesses are successful, first of all, if they recognize the needs of the owners, the employees, the vendors, and the community they work in. So he's been trying to remedy some of the inequities that may exist relative to the Nugget. He also announced to the Board of Supervisors after much negotiation that he has formed the Hop and May Adams Trust, and that May Adams Trust now controls 100% of the Nugget, that the families essentially sold their interests to that trust, and it's now all controlled by the Hop and May Adams Trust, of which he is a member of the trust. I believe Andy McKenzie is a member of the trust, and there are a couple of other folks that are. The trust has a very direct and specific goal in mind. It will be in service of the needs of Carson City. Quite a bit of the wealth of the Nugget didn't stay in town. It went to the estates of the various parties, and that wealth is coming back into town. It's going to be transferred into the trust at some point in time. He's also looking at the type of project that will fund the trust also through a foundation, and the foundation will be the recipient of the funds from the trust. So, and that'll be the Hop and May Adams Foundation. And the gist of how he's going to make this work is that he has to have the sale, the latest sale, the Nevada side 50% sale, approved by the Gaming Control Board. And that will go in front of the Gaming Control Board either February or March. He's been keeping the Gaming Control Board abreast of it. Steve did get his gaming license, and so he is the licensee. And as a member of the trust, he's going to spin off the gaming operation from the real estate. The real estate is the 8 acres in and around the property. The real estate is scattered throughout town. They have quite a bit of holdings, as well as throughout eastern Washington, Idaho, and Montana, and Wyoming. And so that's a lot of real estate, and that real estate will be translated into either settling with a lot of the heirs on both sides of the family, handling the the payoff to the both sides of the family, and also feeding the trust that'll feed the foundation. Steve is a businessman, and he feels very strongly that this is an opportunity that Carson City could use this as a model for at least getting a project that could be quite helpful to us from an economic development standpoint. And he would like to see that the trust is a leverage for a mixed-use project. In other words, he's got the land, and he will work with the private sector and the city to take the proceeds of the lease payments on that land on an annual basis, feed the trust, and then go to the Board of Supervisors and ask the Board of Supervisors. It's got a piece of a little bit bigger piece of the gaming pie, but enough of it to at least be sustainable as a business. Steve's background. He really made an eloquent presentation to the Board of Supervisors last Thursday. I don't know if any of you got to watch it, but he talked in terms of how he was only for a few months when he was 11 years old, a resident of our children's home. And he spent time on the street as well as trying to try to protect himself in his preteen and teenage years. But by the time he was 15, he had formed his own business. He was working for some casino entities up in Sparks. He was cleaning their sidewalks. And by the time he was 17, he was a recipient of a $10,000 direct loan from the Small Business Administration to start his first business. He wasn't old enough to be able to draw down or open up a bank account to have a business at that point, so he had to have a partner. By the time he was 25, Inc. magazine was recognizing him as one of the top entrepreneurs in the West, and he has started 14 businesses in his lifetime, all of them still operational. He formed a turnaround business, turnaround specialty business in his early 40s, and has been instrumental in turning around small to mid-sized, mostly manufacturing and technology firms throughout the country, helping them to reinvigorate their business and stay afloat. And he has a success ratio pretty high. He's got a master's of business administration now. He's also a fellow at Harvard and MIT, and fairly well recognized in the business turnaround arena. He had no interest in this project whatsoever other than to do a favor for a family friend. But it's interesting. Steve laid out his particular philosophy as a turnaround specialist, and he calls it a stakeholder philosophy. And the stakeholder philosophy is that businesses are successful, first of all, if they recognize the needs of the owners, the employees, the vendors, and the community they work in. So he's been trying to remedy some of the inequities that may exist relative to the Nugget. He also announced to the Board of Supervisors after much negotiation that he has formed the Hop and May Adams Trust, and that May Adams Trust now controls 100% of the Nugget, that the families essentially sold their interests to that trust, and it's now all controlled by the Hop and May Adams Trust, of which he is a member of the trust. I believe Andy McKenzie is a member of the trust, and there are a couple of other folks that are. The trust has a very direct and specific goal in mind. It will be in service of the needs of Carson City. Quite a bit of the wealth of the Nugget didn't stay in town. It went to the estates of the various parties, and that wealth is coming back into town. It's going to be transferred into the trust at some point in time. He's also looking at the type of project that will fund the trust also through a foundation, and the foundation will be the recipient of the funds from the trust. So, and that'll be the Hop and May Adams Foundation. And the gist of how he's going to make this work is that he has to have the sale, the latest sale, the Nevada side 50% sale, approved by the Gaming Control Board. And that will go in front of the Gaming Control Board either February or March. He's been keeping the Gaming Control Board abreast of it. Steve did get his gaming license, and so he is the licensee. And as a member of the trust, he's going to spin off the gaming operation from the real estate. The real estate is the 8 acres in and around the property. The real estate is scattered throughout town. They have quite a bit of holdings, as well as throughout eastern Washington, Idaho, and Montana, and Wyoming. And so that's a lot of real estate, and that real estate will be translated into either settling with a lot of the heirs on both sides of the family, handling the payoff to the both sides of the family, and also feeding the trust that'll feed the foundation. Steve is a businessman, and he feels very strongly that this is an opportunity that Carson City could use this as a model for at least getting a project that could be quite helpful to us from an economic development standpoint. And he would like to see that the trust is a leverage for a mixed-use project. In other words, he's got the land, and he will work with the private sector and the city to take the proceeds of the lease payments on that land on an annual basis, feed the trust, and then go to the Board of Supervisors and ask the Board of Supervisors how they would like to put that annual allocation into the trust, into service for Carson City, especially Carson City organizations that serve youth and or serve workforce training activity. I think he's planning on carving a portion of that annual revenue from lease payments on the project back to subsidizing the business incubation portion of the project. What is the project? Can you hit my? The reason why the project came about in the fashion it did is that standard downtown redevelopment is always looking for bringing the types of stimulating projects that are traditional, the lodging properties, conference space, some residential possibly, and the like. But we're in a different economy, as we know. And Steve, being the businessman and being a person who's created businesses with large workforces, recognizes that communities that have good places to work, that pay good wages, and grow new industries have the best chance of succeeding in the new economy. So we'd like to make the Nugget kind of the linchpin of that initiative going forward. So he commissioned a study by Candace Evart, who is the president of Meridian Business Advisors. Meridian Business Advisors is a regional and national business analysis firm. They base themselves out of Reno. Candace was a former Nevada tax commissioner. She was the finance director in her early career for Washoe County, and she's built a very strong business that serves both the public sector and the private sector. They did the business analysis on the Legend project in Sparks. They did the business analysis on Washoe County's project. Actually, it was Reno's project to bring Cabela's to the west end of town. They did the business analysis and fiscal analysis of the potential project in North Douglas. They've done a lot of work in and around the area, very viable firm, and we put them to work, and Steve put them to work. And basically, you can see from this slide, and I'm not going to go through it. It's not. We don't have to be intuitive to know that our economy has changed in Carson City. We are much more focused on public service work. 45% of our employee base is in the public sector. Our primary job or our good wage jobs in the private sector are diminished, and we are much more in a service-based economy and a government-based economy, and that puts us at risk. We need to have a more diversified economy. And so he thinks that maybe this project could be a catalyst to start helping us in that direction. I'm going to give you a handout that lists all of in a nutshell, the Meridian Business Advisors report. And so this was a catalyst, again, for us to refine what the project will be. Can you pop to the next one? What are the objectives of the project? Is to create a sustainable economic engine that drives new jobs, energize downtown with a definable town center and a hub for the community, diversify an economic base from new industries, educate and train youth for high-paying jobs, and build and attract and create new companies. This wouldn't happen if we didn't have two things. One, someone's bringing 8 acres to Carson City in its downtown and put it in service of the community. Secondly, we've got a philanthropic component of this that allows us to leverage our resources to be able to do this project. We couldn't do it without it. We're not a big enough community to attract private investment without this kind of public-private partnership. So hit the next one. What is the project made of? One of the things that Steve is he's determined to see this project have a public-private component. We took him back to Rockville, Maryland, to see a project in Rockville, Maryland. He's very much in support of civic institutions as anchors for private investment. So I took him back to Rockville, Maryland. Rockville, Maryland had a big hole in its ground in the middle of its downtown 5 years ago. Through a public-private partnership with the development community and the city and the county, they put together a very complex project that used a library as its anchor. The library was a 60,000-square-foot library. They put on the top floor a business incubator, hired a business incubation management firm, dedicated 25,000 square feet to this business incubator, and attached an art center to the project. With that, the private sector came in and built office space, retail, residential, and a big town square. And from a hole in the ground, in 5 years, Rockville, Maryland had a center of gravity and a terrific project, of which their business incubator alone creates somewhere between 17 and 20 new. How they would like to put that annual allocation into the trust into service for Carson City, especially Carson City organizations that serve youth and or serve workforce training activity. I think he's planning on carving a portion of that annual revenue from lease payments on the project back to subsidizing the business incubation portion of the project. What is the project? Can you hit my... The reason why the project came about in the fashion it did is that standard downtown redevelopment is always looking for bringing the types of stimulating projects that are traditional, the lodging properties, conference space, some residential possibly, and the like. But we're in a different economy, as we know. And Steve, being the businessman and being a person who's created businesses with large workforces, recognizes that communities that have good places to work, that pay good wages, and grow new industries have the best chance of succeeding in the new economy. So we'd like to make the Nugget kind of the linchpin of that initiative going forward. So he commissioned a study by Candace Evart, who is the president of Meridian Business Advisors. Meridian Business Advisors is a regional and national business analysis firm. They base themselves out of Reno. Candace was a former Nevada tax commissioner. She was the finance director in her early career for Washoe County, and she's built a very strong business that serves both the public sector and the private sector. They did the business analysis on the Legend project in Sparks. They did the business analysis on Washoe County's project. Actually, it was Reno's project to bring Cabela's to the west end of town. They did the business analysis and fiscal analysis of the potential project in North Douglas. They've done a lot of work in and around the area, very viable firm, and we put them to work, and Steve put them to work. And basically, you can see from this slide, and I'm not going to go through it. It's not. We don't have to be intuitive to know that our economy has changed in Carson City. We are much more focused on public service work. 45% of our employee base is in the public sector. Our primary job or our good wage jobs in the private sector are diminished, and we are much more in a service-based economy and a government-based economy, and that puts us at risk. We need to have a more diversified economy. And so he thinks that maybe this project could be a catalyst to start helping us in that direction. I'm going to give you a handout that lists all of in a nutshell, the Meridian Business Advisors report. And so this was a catalyst, again, for us to refine what the project will be. Can you pop to the next one? What are the objectives of the project? Is to create a sustainable economic engine that drives new jobs, energize downtown with a definable town center and a hub for the community, diversify an economic base from new industries, educate and train youth for high-paying jobs, and build and attract and create new companies. This wouldn't happen if we didn't have two things. One, someone's bringing 8 acres to Carson City in its downtown and put it in service of the community. Secondly, we've got a philanthropic component of this that allows us to leverage our resources to be able to do this project. We couldn't do it without it. We're not a big enough community to attract private investment without this kind of public-private partnership. So hit the next one. What is the project made of? One of the things that Steve is he's determined to see this project have a public-private component. We took him back to Rockville, Maryland, to see a project in Rockville, Maryland. He's very much in support of civic institutions as anchors for private investment. So I took him back to Rockville, Maryland. Rockville, Maryland had a big hole in its ground in the middle of its downtown 5 years ago. Through a public-private partnership with the development community and the city and the county, they put together a very complex project that used a library as its anchor. The library was a 60,000-square-foot library. They put on the top floor a business incubator, hired a business incubation management firm, dedicated 25,000 square feet to this business incubator, and attached an art center to the project. With that, the private sector came in and built office space, retail, residential, and a big town square. And from a hole in the ground, in 5 years, Rockville, Maryland had a center of gravity and a terrific project, of which their business incubator alone creates somewhere between 17 and 20 new businesses on the average of 7 employees per business. And of those businesses, over a four-year period, 80% of those businesses are still operational, and all 80% of them are within 5 miles of this project. So they created a terrific workforce generator and a new sense of being. Steve liked that idea, but we didn't have a center of gravity. What is it going to be? Their focus was pharmaceutical and biotech. We didn't have a focus. So we were scrambling around. With the help of Northern Nevada Development Authority and the expertise over in that group, we were able to identify a potential partner that would bring a digital media component to this project, build a small digital media lab where this company, who already has contracts to create both animation and live television production for the BBC, public broadcasting. They have a small contract with Pixar and a number of others. They're looking for a place to do their digital media work. And we're trying to attract them. We have a letter of intent going to the board next week to keep moving that along. So we think we have some partners. We have an idea. But Steve wants to make sure that the business incubator that we build is a multi-purpose business incubator. It's not focused on just one industry. It's focused on anything and everything that's a good idea with young, aggressive, even those of us who want to take a shot at my age at a business. He wants to encourage that kind of activity, and he will lend support to that. And that's where the trust and the foundation comes in. He's going to create a variable rent that's a rent that is easily manageable for startup businesses. He's going to provide the expertise, everything from how to put business plans together to how to recruit financing, either through investors, through people who want to buy into a little bit of stock in the building, and or even the traditional financing mechanisms through finance institutions. But mostly startups need just a little bit of money and a lot of help to get started. And he wants to be part of helping that activity. So he sees the library as a research component. It's the center where the new startups and the businesses, as they grow, can access information in a public space that is free, that gives them everything from competitor intelligence information to how to grow their business and how to improve their business. And libraries are excellent at research centers. And Sarah Jones, being our librarian, understands how to put a knowledge center together that can support the business community. So those are two components that are going to be in it. The digital media lab, the will be an attached component to the library. The business incubator will be part of the library. We're also looking at potential opportunities to put a public plaza in the project, a small public plaza, but it'll be the kind of urban plaza that is actively programmed, that will have things going on, and on a regular basis we'll work with especially our Parks and Recs department to help us program that. And the success they're having at the ice rink is a perfect example that we can program stuff in our community. But it'll be a gathering place. It'll be a place for children to gather. It'll have public art in it. It'll have great interest. It won't be a passive park. It'll be an actively programmed urban plaza. As part of it, we're bringing in the transit hub. So our JAC system that's growing, and we have a good solid bus system now, needs a transit hub. And we believe this could be the site to bring the public transportation. So in other words, you're going to have a walkable downtown. You're going to have public transit as well as automobiles. So you have all accesses to this site, all three components, unique in this community. The private sector side. The private sector side will look at building Class A office space, adding a sufficient amount of the types of retail that is local serving retail, as well as the types of retail that's not in the community anymore. There could be a residential component when the market allows for that residential component. And of course, I think near and dear to my heart, I believe that there will be a 24/7 entertainment component. Now, we have a placeholder there calling it an IMAX theater or something like that. But it could be everything from a small, really high-quality repertory theater for a professional theater company to that will allow for quality dance productions also. Something that's lacking in the community, desperately tried to get that in the Brewery Arts Center, but it's very hard to do because we just don't have the facilities. On the average of 7 employees per business, and of those businesses, over a four-year period, 80% of those businesses are still operational, and all 80% of them are within 5 miles of this project. So they created a terrific workforce generator and a new sense of being. Steve liked that idea, but we didn't have a center of gravity. What is it going to be? Their focus was pharmaceutical and biotech. We didn't have a focus. So we were scrambling around. With the help of Northern Nevada Development Authority and the expertise over in that group, we were able to identify a potential partner that would bring a digital media component to this project, build a small digital media lab where this company, who already has contracts to create both animation and live television production for the BBC, public broadcasting. They have a small contract with Pixar and a number of others. They're looking for a place to do their digital media work. And we're trying to attract them. We have a letter of intent going to the board next week to keep moving that along. So we think we have some partners. We have an idea. But Steve wants to make sure that the business incubator that we build is a multi-purpose business incubator. It's not focused on just one industry. It's focused on anything and everything that's a good idea with young, aggressive, even those of us who want to take a shot at my age at a business. He wants to encourage that kind of activity, and he will lend support to that. And that's where the trust and the foundation comes in. He's going to create a variable rent that's a rent that is easily manageable for startup businesses. He's going to provide the expertise, everything from how to put business plans together to how to recruit financing, either through investors, through people who want to buy into a little bit of stock in the building, and or even the traditional financing mechanisms through finance institutions. But mostly startups need just a little bit of money and a lot of help to get started. And he wants to be part of helping that activity. So he sees the library as a research component. It's the center where the new startups and the businesses, as they grow, can access information in a public space that is free, that gives them everything from competitor intelligence information to how to grow their business and how to improve their business. And libraries are excellent at research centers. And Sarah Jones, being our librarian, understands how to put a knowledge center together that can support the business community. So those are two components that are going to be in it. The digital media lab, the will be an attached component to the library. The business incubator will be part of the library. We're also looking at potential opportunities to put a public plaza in the project, a small public plaza, but it'll be the kind of urban plaza that is actively programmed, that will have things going on, and on a regular basis we'll work with especially our Parks and Recs department to help us program that. And the success they're having at the ice rink is a perfect example that we can program stuff in our community. But it'll be a gathering place. It'll be a place for children to gather. It'll have public art in it. It'll have great interest. It won't be a passive park. It'll be an actively programmed urban plaza. As part of it, we're bringing in the transit hub. So our JAC system that's growing and growing, and we have a good solid bus system now, needs a transit hub. And we believe this could be the site to bring the public transportation. So in other words, you're going to have a walkable downtown, you're going to have public transit as well as automobiles. So you have all accesses to this site, all three components, unique in this community. The private sector side. The private sector side will look at building Class A office space, adding a sufficient amount of the types of retail that is local serving retail, as well as the types of retail that's not in the community anymore. There could be a residential component when the market allows for that residential component. And of course, I think near and dear to my heart, I believe that there will be a 24/7 entertainment component. Now, we have a placeholder there calling it an IMAX theater or something like that. But it could be everything from a small, really high-quality repertory theater for a professional theater company to that will allow for quality dance productions also. Something that's lacking in the community, desperately tried to get that in the Brewery Arts Center, but it's very hard to do because we just don't have the facility to do that. The Brewery Arts Center has the great halls for music and for children's programming and the like, but their facilities right now don't lend itself to dramatic theater in a way that will attract big crowds. So maybe that's a space and connected with it. Who knows? It could be the kinds of things that Greg and I have talked about in the past where it could be quality first-run art films. So, but it's going to be something like that. Steve's put a team together. Steve's team, and he's funding the team, consists of Mark Lewis. Mark Lewis is a veteran public official, worked in the state of California, is actually was a city manager at the age of 26 in Alaska and moved on to a number of other projects. He was recognized in 2006, I believe, by the California Redevelopment Association, Redevelopment Public Official of the Year for the projects that he did. He brought AA baseball to Stockton. He brought hotels to Stockton, very difficult community to redevelop, but he was fairly successful there. He lasted 7 years, which is the longest any public official has ever lasted in Stockton. And he was the redevelopment director in Reno until Reno imploded recently in their fiscal crisis. Steve reached out to him and brought him down. Mark is instrumental in really put the deal together to bring the Reno Aces to Northern Nevada. So he's working with Steve to identify who the master developers could be, a team of master developers. He's also hired a gentleman named Robert Hartman, who's had a long career in the technology industry, has started many businesses himself, and his job has been tasked to get those entrepreneurs into the business incubator program, get that thing started, and also start to attract other businesses that want to be around that are already functioning businesses. And Robert's career has spread from New Zealand to Silicon Valley to Belgium, and a very, very good quality team. Tammy and I are obviously the city side, and we've been working with them to try to facilitate this. That's the site. We're going to compress everything into 8 acres, recognizing that Rockville was 8 acres, and they were able to do it in 8 acres, and it's a beautiful project. So go ahead, just skip through that now. Obviously, I put a slide in there to give you an idea that an urban park or an urban plaza is crucial to this project. And it is a place where it's a gathering place, and it'll be actively programmed. And it's all consistent with the plans that the community has told us they want us to implement. We went through our master planning process back in 2004, 2005. Jen and I can remember that. Sat in a lot of junior highs and middle schools and elementary schools and everywhere else, listening to the community tell us what they want. And that was translated into a document that the board approved in 2006 called Envision Carson City, and it asked for gathering places. It asked for places that are actively programmed where the community can really bring their entire family to and feel safe and enjoy. So this project ought to be able to do that, and we're going to push very hard that this project has this kind of place. Go ahead, Jim. Parking has always been a question. I've lived in this town now for 31 years, and the big P word is always the number one word that comes up. Is there enough parking? Steve has engaged the services of Ferrin Pierce, which is the parking consultant firm in Northern Nevada. They're updating the parking study and parking strategy that they did for us when we did our master plan and our downtown work over 2006 and 2007. And they're going to make sure, because Steve is concerned that we, if we underestimate the parking, we will jeopardize the project. So it'll be structured parking. It'll be surface parking. Who knows? We may be even be able to put a little bit of subsurface parking in. But we will accommodate the parking so that the project can be successful. I think I've covered most of this, but really this is just an overview. I'm here to answer your question because this project is getting a lot of play in the newspaper and a lot of play in the coffee shops and in the taverns of the community. So I'm here to get your suggestions, your recommendations, your ideas, and also to answer or maybe dispel some misunderstanding about the project.
Thank you, Joe. Commission members?
I'll start, Joe. Fairly easy one, I think. One of the things I haven't got a full firm grasp on is how the project ultimately, over the course of the project, I don't know what the time frame for something like this.
To do that, the Brewery Arts Center has the great halls for music and for children's programming and the like, but their facilities right now don't lend itself to dramatic theater in a way that will attract big crowds. So maybe that's a space and connected with it. Who knows? It could be the kinds of things that Greg and I have talked about in the past where it could be quality first run art films. So, but it's going to be something like that. Steve's put a team together. Steve's team, and he's funding the team, consists of Mark Lewis. Mark Lewis is a veteran public official, worked in the state of California, was a city manager at the age of 26 in Alaska and moved on to a number of other projects. He was recognized in 2006, I believe, by the California Redevelopment Association Redevelopment Public Official of the Year for the projects that he did. He brought AA baseball to Stockton. He brought hotels to Stockton, very difficult community to redevelop, but he was fairly successful there. He lasted 7 years, which is the longest any public official has ever lasted in Stockton. And he was the redevelopment director in Reno until Reno imploded recently in their fiscal crisis. Steve reached out to him and brought him down. Mark is instrumental in really put the deal together to bring the Reno Aces to Northern Nevada. So he's working with Steve to identify who the master developers could be, a team of master developers. He's also hired a gentleman named Robert Hartman, who's had a long career in the technology industry, has started many businesses himself, and his job has been tasked to get those entrepreneurs into the business incubator program, get that thing started, and also start to attract other businesses that want to be around that are already functioning businesses. And Robert's career has spread from New Zealand to Silicon Valley to Belgium, and a very, very good quality team. Tammy and I are obviously the city side, and we've been working with them to try to facilitate this. That's the site. We're going to compress everything into 8 acres, recognizing that Rockville was 8 acres, and they were able to do it in 8 acres, and it's a beautiful project. So go ahead, just skip through that now. Obviously, I put a slide in there to give you an idea that an urban park or an urban plaza is crucial to this project. And it is a place where it's a gathering place, and it'll be actively programmed. And it's all consistent with the plans that the community has told us they want us to implement. We went through our master planning process back in 2004, 2005. Jen and I can remember that. Sat in a lot of junior highs and middle schools and elementary schools and everywhere else, listening to the community tell us what they want. And that was translated into a document that the board approved in 2006 called Envision Carson City, and it asked for gathering places. It asks for places that are actively programmed where the community can really bring their entire family to and feel safe and enjoy. So this project ought to be able to do that, and we're going to push very hard that this project has this kind of place. Go ahead, Jim. Parking has always been a question. I've lived in this town now for 31 years, and the big P word is always the number one word that comes up. Is there enough parking? Steve has engaged the services of Ferrin Pierce, which is the parking consultant firm in Northern Nevada. They're updating the parking study and parking strategy that they did for us when we did our master plan and our downtown work over 2006 and 2007. And they're going to make sure, because Steve is concerned that we, if we underestimate the parking, we will jeopardize the project. So it'll be structured parking. It'll be surface parking. Who knows? We may be even be able to put a little bit of subsurface parking in. But we will accommodate the parking so that the project can be successful. I think I've covered most of this, but really this is just an overview. I'm here to answer your question because this project is getting a lot of play in the newspaper and a lot of play in the coffee shops and in the taverns of the community. So I'm here to get your suggestions, your recommendations, your ideas, and also to answer or maybe dispel some misunderstanding about the project.
Thank you, Joe. Commission members?
I'll start, Joe. Fairly easy one, I think. One of the things I haven't got a full firm grasp on is how the project ultimately, over the course of the project, I don't know what the time frame for something like this might be, 10 years, I don't know, how does that affect redevelopment funds that may be available to other peripheral businesses and property owners and such?
I'm going to go through the timeline. This is an aggressive timeline to get this project up and going. And the reason why is we couldn't have done this project 2 years ago. We all know the cost of construction 2 years ago, it was prohibitive. 2 years from now, if we're so lucky, we'll have an economy again, and that kind of opportunity will go by the wayside for us again. We want to take advantage of a downtime where the cost of construction of the entire project may be more reasonable. So we're on an aggressive timeline to see if we can get this thing going. And so we have brought a timeline to the Board of Supervisors, and they have tentatively approved our timeline. They will officially approve it on February 4th. But January 21st, actually, I'm incorrect in putting that up here. I'm going to do my status report, and I'm going to ask the Board to approve a finance plan and the final schedule at the February 4th meeting. On January 21st, we're actually bringing the letters of intent with the company that's going to manage the Digital Media Lab, and we're also bringing a letter of intent from the company that we're proposing that will manage the business incubator. That firm is C4 Cube. They're already running a business incubator in Reno, and they're a couple of talented entrepreneurs in their own right, and we think they'll be the right team to manage our business incubator. Trust me, Steve Neighbors will crack the whip and make sure that he's got every intent to make sure that they deliver on their requirements. So we'll be bringing those letters of intent on the 21st, which is next Thursday. We'll also bring it to the Board on next Thursday a request that the Board approve the creation of a feedback committee. We're trying to create as much transparency on this project as you can without hindering the private sector's need for proprietary information as they acquire and assemble properties. We're putting a feedback team together that the Board will appoint, we hope, or at least consider appointing next Thursday. They will, I guess we can call them an advisory group, but we're looking for feedback and we're looking for ideas from this as we go forward. So that committee has been formed. We also have an internal committee that has been formed at the city side, led by the city manager. The district attorney's involved, the public works director's involved, the planning director's involved, myself, and the three members of Steve's team, Mark Lewis, Robert Hartman, and Steve himself. So they're going to meet weekly, too, to try to continue to push this along. And I tell you this only because we got a very aggressive schedule to get a shovel into the ground. On February 18th, our requirements is to complete a business impact statement. Because the finance portion of this project on the public side will require that we have some leverage dollars. And the leverage dollars could be accomplished by increasing our sales tax by an eighth of a cent. The Meridian Business Report did an analysis of what that would generate for the project, and that would be $12.4 million. With that $12.4 million, that should be the catalyst to generate about $80 million altogether of public investment. So we're very hopeful that the board moves forward in that fashion. But that will be a public process. We have to create a business impact statement as to the 1/8 cent sales tax and what that's going to, how that's going to impact the community. So, and also we're required to bring back to the board what are called business terms. Some people call it deal points. But it's what goes into a development agreement. And the development agreement will have many partners. It will have the business incubator. It will have the digital media lab manager. It will have the master developers who will do the public buildings and the private buildings. And it will be the city. And it will be the Nugget, who is the landowner. So a development agreement is going to have many parties to it. And we're going to put the, we're considering the business terms right now. And we'll bring them back to the board for their discussion, feedback, alteration, and remedy. And then we'll bring, hit the next slide. On March 4th, we bring back a first reading of the sales tax ordinance for them to consider, and we're going to have the board review again the business terms or the
10 years, I don't know. How does that affect redevelopment funds that may be available to other peripheral businesses and property owners and such?
I'm going to go through the timeline. This is an aggressive timeline to get this project up and going. And the reason why is we couldn't have done this project 2 years ago. We all know the cost of construction 2 years ago, it was prohibitive. 2 years from now, if we're so lucky, we'll have an economy again, and that kind of opportunity will go by the wayside for us again. We want to take advantage of a downtime where the cost of construction of the entire project may be more reasonable. So we're on an aggressive timeline to see if we can get this thing going. And so we have brought a timeline to the Board of Supervisors, and they have tentatively approved our timeline. They will officially approve it on February 4th. But January 21st, actually, I'm incorrect in putting that up here. I'm going to do my status report, and I'm going to ask the board to approve a finance plan and the final schedule at the February 4th meeting. On January 21st, we're actually bringing the letters of intent with the company that's going to manage the digital media lab, and we're also bringing a letter of intent from the company that we're proposing that will manage the business incubator. That firm is C4 Cube. They're already running a business incubator in Reno, and they're a couple of talented entrepreneurs in their own right, and we think they'll be the right team to manage our business incubator. Trust me, Steve Neighbors will crack the whip and make sure that he's got every intent to make sure that they deliver on their requirements. So we'll be bringing those letters of intent on the 21st, which is next Thursday. We'll also bring it to the board on next Thursday a request that the board approve the creation of a feedback committee. We're trying to create as much transparency on this project as you can without hindering the private sector's need for proprietary information as they acquire and assemble properties. We're putting a feedback team together that the board will appoint, we hope, or at least consider appointing next Thursday. They will, I guess we can call them an advisory group, but we're looking for feedback and we're looking for ideas from this as we go forward. So that committee has been formed. We also have an internal committee that has been formed at the city side, led by the city manager. The district attorney's involved, the public works director's involved, the planning director's involved, myself, and the three members of Steve's team, Mark Lewis, Robert Hartman, and Steve himself. So they're going to meet weekly, too, to try to continue to push this along. And I tell you this only because we got a very aggressive schedule to get a shovel into the ground. On February 18th, our requirements is to complete a business impact statement. Because the finance portion of this project on the public side will require that we have some leverage dollars. And the leverage dollars could be accomplished by increasing our sales tax by 1/8 cent. The Meridian Business Report did an analysis of what that would generate for the project, and that would be $12.4 million. With that $12.4 million, that should be the catalyst to generate about $80 million altogether of public investment. So we're very hopeful that the board moves forward in that fashion. But that will be a public process. We have to create a business impact statement as to the 1/8 cent sales tax and what that's going to, how that's going to impact the community. So, and also we're required to bring back to the board what are called business terms. Some people call it deal points, but it's what goes into a development agreement. And the development agreement will have many partners. It will have the business incubator. It will have the digital media lab manager. It will have the master developers who will do the public buildings and the private buildings. And it will be the city. And it will be the Nugget, who is the landowner. So a development agreement is going to have many parties to it. And we're going to put the, we're considering the business terms right now. And we'll bring them back to the board for their discussion, feedback, alteration, and remedy. And then we'll bring, hit the next slide. On March 4th, we bring back a first reading of the sales tax ordinance for them to consider. And we're going to have the board review again the business terms or the deal points of the development agreement. And then we hope on March 18th we take an action in the second meeting, the second reading of the ordinance on March 18th, which will confirm the use of the 1/8 cent for this project. The statute, and I'm just going to summarize, and I'm going to not try to try to interpret the statute, but the board is allowed to increase its sales tax a 1/4 percent if it focuses on culture or recreation. And so the 1/8 percent, they've already done it for the V&T Railroad. Now the other 1/8 percent, they still have an option to do, and they can do it for the construction of the Knowledge Center or the library, the Knowledge and Discovery Library. So the second reading would be considered on the 18th of March, and of course, at the exact same time, we're going to bring the development agreement to the board for their approval. And it's going to have all the parties, the developers, Digital Lab, Business Incubator, the Nugget, and the like. We got our work cut out for us, and it's going to be a lot of work between now and then. But as we go forward, we're going to try and do this in a very public and transparent way and get feedback from all the groups in the community. And then we're going to get authority to proceed. And go ahead, Jen. March 19th, then the real work begins, because all we have is a development agreement. We're going to hold the developers' feet to the fire, and there are going to be clawbacks throughout the development agreement to protect the city's interests. Steve's reiterated again to the board at the last meeting is that he's directed both myself and his team that we've got to do everything we can to not put the city at risk. Let's get the project done without putting us at risk. So that those development agreements will have a lot of teeth in them to protect the city's interests. And that's the goal going forward. That's why the DA is actively involved to make sure that that happens. We begin implementing the points as part of the agreement. We start forming these contracts, and we begin the entitlement process. And boy, Jen, 120 days, an aggressive time entitlement process, but it's doable. We've worked directly with the planning department to ensure that that timeline is doable. So we hope in April 1, the board approves the design. Project design. So the architects are already starting to fiddle around with things on their own dime, knowing that we're moving forward. But once we commit our portion of the public improvements, and I'm going to reiterate, there is no incentives here to developers. The public dollars are building public improvements only. The private sector will build the private side. Right? The $12.4 million, if we're so fortunate as to get all of the components built, it will generate enough new tax increment, and that tax increment will get poured back into the project to build the other infrastructure, the parking, the all the landscaping, all the other components, that all the utilities, all the development that needs to be done in order to facilitate the private side development. So the tax increment will be put to public use and public improvements only. We hope by June 1 that the entitlement process is complete. Design will be complete by October 1. I hope this advisory group is hands-on, and we're going to meet with them on a regular basis I suppose I'm getting a little bit exaggerated that they're not going to pick every doorknob, but they're going to have control over how this project looks. And this has to be consistent with the aesthetic of Carson City. It can't be in contrast to it. So it'll be built in. That's why we're going to probably need a lot of your help, too, to help us with your expertise in guiding the design team that's doing both the public and the private side, that it's consistent with the authenticity of Carson City. We hope by November 30th that we'll have a groundbreaking. That's kind of symbolic in a way. You don't groundbreak right before winter, but we have two public officials on the board and their terms are termed out. And so it would be nice to have a groundbreaking and celebration of both Pete and Robin being part of the board that helped put this together. November 1, 2013, first phase, whatever that means, Rob, first phase, which will be the library, digital media center, the park, parking garage, and the like. My guess would be is the private sector is going to push this hard. The master developer or developers will build the whole thing. They will build the private side, the office space, the retail, and the other commercial buildings, and they'll also build the library, the digital media lab, and the like. The deal points of the development agreement, and then we hope on March 18th we take an action in the second meeting, the second reading of the ordinance on March 18th, which will confirm the use of the eighth of a cent for this project. The statute, and I'm just going to summarize, and I'm going to not try to try to interpret the statute, but the board is allowed to increase its sales tax a quarter of a percent if it focuses on culture or recreation. And so the eighth of a percent, they've already done it for the V&T Railroad. Now the other eighth of a percent, they still have an option to do, and they can do it for the construction of the Knowledge Center of the library, the Knowledge and Discovery Library. So the second reading would be considered on the 18th of March, and of course, at the exact same time, we're going to bring the development agreement to the board for their approval. And it's going to have all the parties, the developers, Digital Lab, Business Incubator, the Nugget, and the like. We got our work cut out for us, and it's going to be a lot of work between now and then. But as we go forward, we're going to try and do this in a very public and transparent way and get feedback from all the groups in the community. And then we're going to get authority to proceed. And go ahead, Jen. March 19th, then the real work begins, because all we have is a development agreement. We're going to hold the developers' feet to the fire, and there are going to be clawbacks throughout the development agreement to protect the city's interest. Steve reiterated again to the board at the last meeting is that he's directed both myself and his team that we got to do everything we can to not put the city at risk. Let's get the project done without putting us at risk. So that those development agreements will have a lot of teeth in them to protect the city's interests. And that's the goal going forward. That's why the DA is actively involved, to make sure that that happens. We begin implementing the points as part of the agreement. We start forming these contracts, and we begin the entitlement process. And boy, Jen, 120 days, an aggressive time entitlement process, but it's doable. We've worked directly with the planning department to ensure that timeline is doable. So we hope in April 1 the board approves the design. Project design. So the architects are already starting to fiddle around with things on their own dime, knowing that we're moving forward. But once we commit our portion of the public improvements, and I'm going to reiterate, there is no incentives here to developers. The public dollars are building public improvements only. The private sector will build the private side. Right? The $12.4 million, if we're so fortunate as to get all of the components built, it will generate enough new tax increment, and that tax increment will get poured back into the project to build the other infrastructure, the parking, the all the landscaping, all the other components, that all the utilities, all the development that needs to be done in order to facilitate the private side development. So the tax increment will be put to public use and public improvements only. We hope by June 1 that the entitlement process is complete. Design will be complete by October 1. We hope this advisory group, I hope this advisory group is hands-on, and we're going to meet with them on a regular basis I suppose I'm getting a little bit exaggerated that they're not going to pick every doorknob, but they're going to have control over how this project looks. And this has to be consistent with the aesthetic of Carson City. It can't be in contrast to it. So it'll be built in. That's why we're going to probably need a lot of your help, too, to help us with your expertise in guiding the design team that doing both the public and the private side, that it's consistent with the authenticity of Carson City. We hope by November 30th that we'll have a groundbreaking. That's kind of symbolic in a way. You don't groundbreak right before winter. But we have two public officials on the board and their termed out. And so it would be nice to have a groundbreaking and celebration of both Pete and Robin being part of being the board that helped put this together. November 1, 2013, first phase, whatever that means, Rob, first phase, which will be the library, digital media center, the park, parking garage, and the like. My guess would be is the private sector is going to push this hard. The master developer or developers will build the whole thing. They will build the private side, the office space, the retail, and the other commercial buildings. And they'll also build the library, the digital media lab, and the like, so that we can control and marry those entities so that they're aesthetically integrated. One of the stipulations that we're going to require as we go through in the development agreement is that all other things being equal, that if it is an outside firm that's hired, a design team that's hired, that they have to collaborate with the design professionals in the community. If it's a general contractor that's hired that's outside the community, that GC has to collaborate with the other general contractors and subcontractors in the community. In other words, if we're proposing to put a jobs project together and we're putting other people to work outside the city, then we're probably misrepresenting this project. So we're going to do our darndest to make sure that we put our own people to work on this project as best we can. So the project is on schedule. It's still on schedule, meaning we hit all these deadlines. We've hit all our deadlines to this point, and everybody's been working very hard to get to this point. All the partners are working extremely hard as we go forward. And again, a reminder, that eighth of a cent sales tax, which is $26 a year to the average family of four in Carson City, that eighth of a cent sales tax of $12.4 million present worth calculation over the period of time that we collected will leverage about $88 million in direct private investment into this project. That's the end of my PowerPoint. Rob, did I answer your questions to any degree?
Pretty much. I got one other thing, yeah. So I have to leave in a minute. Yeah. I want to get it out of my system. My biggest part, the second part of my question, yeah, was that this thing's going to drive, one of the side benefits is that as activity starts up, the peripheral properties will all start to develop.
Yeah. You've hit a nail on the head.
My question is, how is redevelopment separating that so that they still exist for them?
Yeah, we asked when we did the calculation on how much tax increment that the amount of square footage that this project will generate and how much tax increment it generates to support this, which is in the $12 to $15 million range also. So the sales tax generates about $12 million. The tax increment will generate $12 to $14 million, and it's only the tax increment on the project itself. It is not going to affect anything around it. Now, you're right. It should have a lot of things around it blossom. So you're going to see additional new development on older sites that need to be cleared and need to be redeveloped. And you're going to see new tax increment there that the city can use for those projects. But it will not. We're not trying to capture the splash, so to speak, of the tax increment outside this project. It's just the project itself. It's paying for itself.
I guess my point originally was, in a nutshell, that you're not breaking the bank on this and not having something available for the other periphery development that
we're not borrowing from Peter to pay Paul.
Exactly.
That this project itself will pay for itself.
Other questions? Joe, you have any idea what federal funding is going to be used?
We've met with our congressional delegation on both sides of the aisle. And we're getting a lot of help from their staffers right now to identify additional federal funding. One of the, boy, we've got another timeline. We got to get an application in for potential broadband funding. The broadband funding is significant, and this project is a technology project in a lot of ways, with the components of transit and state-of-the-art knowledge center, library, and business incubation. We really need to be, it needs to be a super-duper high-tech project. And so we're reaching out for millions of dollars in broadband money. We hope we get a little bit of that. The other component that's funding it is we're putting an application in to see if we can generate some money from our community development block grant program over a period of time. There's a methodology by which you can allocate a portion of the capital dollars over a period of years and generate quite a bit of funding out of that. And that's a HUD-funded project, so again, that's federally funded. So there will be federal dollars on this by hook or by crook.
They just keep coming. The proximity to the state grounds and the state archives, which is in itself quite a library, is that part of the program? Are they going to be associated with this, or connected, or somehow aligned, or something?
It's all about people, Rob, and so that we can control and marry those entities so that they're aesthetically integrated. One of the stipulations that we're going to require as we go through in the development agreement is that, all other things being equal, that if it is an outside firm that's hired, a design team that's hired, that they have to collaborate with the design professionals in the community. If it's a general contractor that's hired that's outside the community, that GC has to collaborate with the other general contractors and subcontractors in the community. In other words, if we're proposing to put a jobs project together and we're putting other people to work outside the city, then we're probably misrepresenting this project. So we're going to do our darndest to make sure that we put our own people to work on this project as best we can. So the project is on schedule. It's still on schedule, meaning we hit all these deadlines. We've hit all our deadlines to this point, and everybody's been working very hard to get to this point. All the partners are working extremely hard as we go forward. And again, a reminder, that eighth of a cent sales tax, which is $26 a year to the average family of four in Carson City, that eighth of a cent sales tax of $12.4 million present worth calculation over the period of time that we collected will leverage about $88 million in direct private investment into this project. That's the end of my PowerPoint. Rob, did I answer your questions to any degree?
Pretty much. I got one other thing, yeah. So I have to leave in a minute. Yeah. I want to get it out of my system. My biggest part of the second part of my question was that this thing's going to drive, one of the side benefits is that as activity starts up, the peripheral properties will all start to develop.
Yeah. You've hit a nail on the head.
My question is, how is redevelopment separating that so that they still exist for them?
We asked, when we did the calculation on how much tax increment that the amount of square footage that this project will generate and how much tax increment it generates to support this, which is in the $12 to $15 million range also. So the sales tax generates about $12 million. The tax increment will generate $12 to $14 million, and it's only the tax increment on the project itself. It is not going to affect anything around it. Now, you're right. It should have a lot of things around it blossom. So you're going to see additional new development on older sites that need to be cleared and need to be redeveloped. And you're going to see new tax increment there that the city can use for those projects. But it will not. We're not trying to capture the splash, so to speak, of the tax increment outside this project. It's just the project itself. It's paying for itself.
I guess my point originally was, in a nutshell, that you're not breaking the bank on this and not having something available for the other periphery development that
We're not borrowing from Peter to pay Paul.
Exactly.
This project itself will pay for itself.
Other questions? Joe, you have any idea what federal funding is going to be used?
We've met with our congressional delegation on both sides of the aisle. and we're getting a lot of help from their staffers right now to identify additional federal funding. One of the, boy, we've got another timeline. We got to get an application in for potential broadband funding. The broadband funding is significant, and this project is a technology project in a lot of ways with the components of transit and state-of-the-art knowledge center, library, and business incubation. We really need to be, it needs to be a super-duper high-tech project. And so we're reaching out for millions of dollars in broadband money. We hope we get a little bit of that. The other component that's funding it is we're putting an application in to see if we can generate some money from our community development block grant program over a period of time. There's a methodology by which you can allocate a portion of the capital dollars over a period of years and generate quite a bit of funding out of that. And that's a HUD-funded project, so again, that's federally funded. So there will be federal dollars on this by hook or by crook.
They just keep coming. The proximity to the state grounds and the state archives, which is in itself quite a library, is that part of the program? Are they going to be associated with this, or connected, or somehow aligned, or something?
It's all about people, Rob, and our current librarian, Sarah Jones, was the executive director of libraries and archives for a number of years. She knows how to interface with all of the other cultural institutions, not only that institution, but the Nevada State Museum and the Department of Cultural Affairs. We're working hand in glove with Peter Barton right now to figure out ways that we can coordinate and collaborate with the other cultural institutions. But the library itself is a civic institution that's open to everybody in our community, and it's free. That's why it's so integral to this project, is that it is the catalytic jumpstart that allows this project to go forward. And, of course, it's the wishes of the May Adam Trust and the foundation that a library be built as part of this anchor. So it's without question has to be the centerpiece.
Any other questions? Do you have to leave right away, Joe? Or
I'm here for as long as you need me.
Why don't we put up the I put together the historic Sanborn maps for the property, and it kind of gives us, Joe kind of alluded to the fact that we talked about some interpretive and some other things we can do. If there's federal funds, I think there's going to be a lot of involvement in terms of cultural resource stuff that might have to be done. And what we talked about was some ways we might be able to obviously get this ahead of the process. But there's some real interesting things going on here that I think.
And Mike, may I interrupt you? Steve Neighbors really wants to call this the Nugget Economic Development Project. And I fully understand that, since the word redevelopment has, it requires additional interpretation. So let's call it the Nugget Economic Development Project.
Anyway, this is the 1885 Sanborn map, and you can see the property sits behind, the Nugget itself sits on block 41 there, and you can see the old opera house was on that block facing Carson Street. There were some shops. The kind of the high rent district in Carson at the time was on the west side of Carson, kind of anchored by the Mint and then Arlington Hotel and those blocks. As you work to the east, you see a few, mostly dwellings. Just to the, two blocks north of Robinson on Washington Street was the V&T Depot, and a lot of railroad activity to the north. So you had, in 1885, there were just lots of kind of low middle-class dwellings in that part of town. I think there was a hay barn or a feedlot and stables down there in block 30. Go to the next one, Jan. 1890, it's kind of interesting because in 1890 you can see that the, 1890. Or 1890, I'm sorry. You can see that the opera house has actually been moved. It was on block 41 where the federal building is, the post office.
And it was moved over to the, where the Nugget is now at Spear, and just kind of turned around position there. Some of those other buildings that are in Block 56 remained, and they just kind of accommodated the, or moved the Opera House so that they could put the new federal building in. Again, we're looking at the 8 acres behind those sections, and there's not a whole lot of change in that 5 years other than the Opera House. Here's a picture, thanks to Jed, of construction of the federal building. You can see the Opera House behind it. It's already been moved, and they're starting work on the building. There's a picture of the Opera House. Obviously, after it's been moved, you can see the building next to it's the same. Okay, Jen. 1907, you start to get a little more development within that that project area. You're starting to see, when you compare these maps, you can see how the houses kind of morph and properties get developed. The house that sits at, I think it's Proctor and Stewart now, the gray house, you can see there's a building on that corner right now, but it's a completely different configuration than the house that's currently there.
Our current librarian, Sarah Jones, was the executive director of libraries and archives for a number of years. She knows how to interface with all of the other cultural institutions, not only that institution, but the Nevada State Museum and the Department of Cultural Affairs. We're working hand in glove with Peter Barton right now to figure out ways that we can coordinate and collaborate with the other cultural institutions. But the library itself is a civic institution that's open to everybody in our community, and it's free. That's why it's so integral to this project, is that it is the catalytic jumpstart that allows this project to go forward. And, of course, it's the wishes of the May Adam Trust and the foundation that a library be built as part of this anchor. So it's without question has to be the centerpiece.
Any other questions? Do you have to leave right away, Joe? Or
I'm here for as long as you need me.
Why don't we put up the I put together the historic Sanborn maps for the property, and it kind of gives us, Joe kind of alluded to the fact that we talked about some interpretive and some other things we can do. If there's federal funds, I think there's going to be a lot of involvement in terms of cultural resource stuff that might have to be done. And what we talked about was some ways we might be able to obviously get this ahead of the process. But there's some real interesting things going on here that I think.
And Mike, may I interrupt you? Steve Neighbors really wants to call this the Nugget Economic Development Project, and I fully understand that, since the word redevelopment has it requires additional interpretation. So let's call it the Nugget Economic Development Project.
Anyway, this is the 1885 Sanborn map, and you can see the property sits behind, the Nugget itself sits on Block 41 there, and you can see the old Opera House was on that block facing Carson Street. There were some shops. The kind of the high rent district in Carson at the time was on the west side of Carson, kind of anchored by the Mint and then Arlington Hotel and those blocks. As you work to the east, you see a few, mostly dwellings. Just to the, two blocks north of Robinson on Washington Street was the V&T Depot, and a lot of railroad activity to the north. So you had, in 1885, there were just lots of kind of low middle-class dwellings in that part of town. I think there was a hay barn or a feedlot and stables down there in Block 30. Go to the next one, Jen. 1890, it's kind of interesting, because in 1990, you can see that
1890.
Or 1890, I'm sorry. You can see that the Opera House has actually been moved. It was on Block 41 where the federal building is, the post office And it was moved over to the, where the Nugget is now at Spear, and just kind of turned around, positioned there. Some of those other buildings that are in Block 56 remained, and they just kind of accommodated the, or moved the Opera House so that they could put the new federal building in. Again, we're looking at the 8 acres behind those sections, and there's not a whole lot of change in that 5 years other than the Opera House. Here's a picture, thanks to Jed, of construction of the federal building. You can see the Opera House behind it. It's already been moved, and they're starting work on the building. There's a picture of the Opera House. Obviously, after it's been moved, you can see the building next to it's the same. Okay, Jen. 1907, you start to get a little more development within that that project area. You're starting to see, when you compare these maps, you can see how the houses kind of morph and properties get developed. The house that sits at, I think it's Proctor and Stewart now, the gray house, you can see there's a building on that corner right now, but it's completely different configuration than the house that's currently there. And then 1923 is the last Sanborn that we have. Again, you see a totally different configuration at Proctor and Stewart. But you have pretty much the ultimate build-out of that neighborhood. In 1957, I think, is when the Nugget came in and began development. So essentially what you have here is asphalt cap within that red project area that caps almost 100 years of development on the kind of the low rent side of town. So there's some real interesting things you could do with archaeology. And just talk to Guy Rocha and some other historians, and there's some real interesting background work you can do on this block to kind of get the histories of the people who lived there, the businesses that were there, and just the flavor of that neighborhood. It's something that we might be able to work into design for the ultimate design, and certainly something that we'd want to kind of celebrate within that public space. So that's kind of what Joe and I were talking about, was how do we, if there's federal money, there's going to be some things that drive this kind of research, which is fortunate because it can be pretty expensive. Really have no idea what the archaeology could be like there, because we have no idea how the parking lots were constructed, whether, if you've got foundations that are 18 inches deep and they have a 24-inch base, things like that are gone. So there's an opportunity to do work, but at this point we really don't know what's there.
You might find some wells.
There's probably I'm sure the Sanborn maps actually show locations of privies and outbuildings, things like that. So it is kind of a treasure map in that sense. If you want to focus some test excavations, you can go to those. I did some work at Moscone Center when they were building that, and that's exactly how we approached the archaeology. We zeroed in on corners where we saw businesses and residences, things that we'd want to look at, and did some quick testing to see what was there, what the potential was, and then work from that. So there's some really neat archaeological potential as well as interpretive potential for this block. And it's something, I would certainly hope that our team had, or that this commission interacted with the design team to make sure that the Carson City, the downtown master plan, really does work with the historic flavor of Carson. And I would certainly hope this did. And I know we're all available to that design team, too, to make sure that the design of this matches it, and that I think we'd all like to make sure we have our input to the interpretive part of this and kind of overseeing it. So now, are there questions for Joe?
The other thing that I'd like to add is that If there is a archaeological component that when we test it and if they find it to be sort of significant, that the community is invited to sort of the public work, public excavations are available for them to view rather than just having it done quickly and covered over by the building, that it becomes part of the project.
We'll make sure when the design team is chosen by the private sector, we'll get them in front of you, and we'll ask them directly to make sure that they participate, and we'll encourage them to.
Other questions, comments? It strikes me there's been a lot of work done up in Virginia City for projects like this where, you know, parking lots have paved over saloons and things like that, and this is an opportunity to kind of bring it down to the Capitol and have us really celebrate, you know, a big block of our history over here. So,
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I just wanted to take time to say thank you to you, Joe, to coming here and providing this information. We really appreciate it. Also, Lee Plemmel, the planning director, would have been here, but he had a census meeting, and he is the lead in that, so he had to attend that. But I also wanted to note there is a website if people are interested in following the project.
Thank you, Jen. Yes, actually we have.
And 1923 is the last Sanborn that we have. Again, you see a totally different configuration at Proctor and Stewart. But you have pretty much the ultimate build-out of that neighborhood. In 1957, I think, is when the Nugget came in and began development. So essentially what you have here is asphalt cap within that red project area that caps almost 100 years of development on the kind of the low rent side of town. So there's some real interesting things you could do with archaeology. And just talk to Guy Rocha and some other historians, and there's some real interesting background work you can do on this block to kind of get the histories of the people who lived there, the businesses that were there, and just the flavor of that neighborhood. It's something that we might be able to work into design for the ultimate design, and certainly something that we'd want to kind of celebrate within that public space. So that's kind of what Joe and I were talking about, was how do we, you know, if there's federal money, there's going to be some things that drive this kind of research, which is fortunate because it can be pretty expensive. Really have no idea what the archaeology could be like there, because we have no idea how the parking lots were constructed, whether, you know, if you've got foundations that are 18 inches deep and they have a 24-inch base, things like that are gone. So there's an opportunity to do work, but at this point we really don't know what's there.
You might find some wells.
There's probably I'm sure the Sanborn maps actually show locations of privies and outbuildings, things like that. So it is kind of a treasure map in that sense. If you want to focus some test excavations, you can go to those. I did some work at Moscone Center when they were building that, and that's exactly how we approached the archaeology. We zeroed in on corners where we saw businesses and residences, things that we'd want to look at, and did some quick testing to see what was there, what the potential was, and then work from that. So there's some really neat archaeological potential as well as interpretive potential for this block, and it's something, you know, I would certainly hope that our team had, or that this commission interacted with the design team to make sure that the Carson City, the downtown master plan, really does work with the historic flavor of Carson, and I would certainly hope this did. And I know we're all available to that design team too to make sure that the design of this matches it, and that I think we'd all like to make sure we have our input to the interpretive part of this and kind of overseeing it. So now, are there questions for Joe?
The other thing that I'd like to add is that If there is a archaeological component that when we test it and if they find it to be sort of significant, that the community is invited to sort of the public work, public excavations are available for them to view rather than just having it done quickly and covered over by the building, that it becomes part of the project.
We'll make sure that when the design team is chosen by the private sector, we'll get them in front of you, and we'll ask them directly to make sure that they participate, and we'll encourage them to.
Other questions, comments? It strikes me there's been a lot of work done up in Virginia City for projects like this where, you know, parking lots have paved over saloons and things like that, and this is an opportunity to kind of bring it down to the Capitol and have us really celebrate, you know, a big block of our history over here. So,
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I just wanted to take time to say thank you to you, Joe, to coming here and providing this information. We really appreciate it. Also, Lee Plemmel, the planning director, would have been here, but he had a census meeting, and he is the lead in that, so he had to attend that. But I also wanted to note there is a website if people are interested in following the project.
Thank you, Jen. Actually, we have two very exciting websites. You want to follow this project. We're calling this Nevada's Working Capital with an AL. That's a little play on words for money, obviously, working capital. Nevada's with an S, no apostrophe, nevadasworkingcapital.com. And the portal that gives you a kind of an overview of everything that we're doing relative to economic development and development in the downtown is downtownanswers.com. And you can get to Nevada's Working Capital that way also, so we have a link. I'm going to pass around just kind of a Q&A question and answer to some of portions of the project. We continue to try to get as much of the information out, and frequently asked questions is a great way to try to summarize what's going on. And then there's another addition. I think I added another piece there, too. The library director and the library board and all of the institutions that provide educational opportunities for K through 16. We're looking at an educational collaborative with them because this will have an educational component in the library that will serve the entire community, both our public school systems, our charter school systems, our private schools and the like. Sarah's reaching out to all of them to have the library be an opportunity for them to take advantage of the new space.
Thank you, Joe. I did give Jen a CD of this PowerPoint. They're all TIFFs that are in there. And if you want to throw that on as a link to it, we can start celebrating the history of that as part of the whole process.
I just want to say thank you it was very interesting, and I like to feel all the energy going on, so look forward to being more involved in whatever that means for John Q. Citizen.
Yeah. Greg, thank you. Telling the backstory is probably the most fun on this project, and seeing how an institution that's been in operation since the late 50s, early 60s in Carson City has been kind of an anchor institution to all of us around here, and how it is taking the lead now in a way that's so unique to help us look at different ways of doing business. It's fascinating.
Any other questions, comments? Any public comment? Jen? You don't want to weigh into this committee, it's just the board.
I've made a discussion about or a comment before about maybe a Carson City History Museum or a county museum, and I don't know if that should be pushed by this commission or in conjunction with the Carson City Cultural Commission at this point in time or where to start that, but I think this is a good opportunity with the generosity of the late Adams family members and things like that, that maybe we can get something like this off the ground.
Any other Public comment? Thank you very much, Joe.
Thank you.
Next item is F4, discussion only regarding an update of certified local government grant 32-09-21834, parentheses 2, historic structures report for the Brewery Arts Center and the Performance Hall. Jen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. City staff, we've been working with the state regarding the funding agreement, and actually there was a minor change at the recommendation of the district attorney's office that we've been working with SHPO, and this afternoon Rebecca provided us with the amended funding agreement. So at this time, once that funding agreement is signed, then we will be able to enter into a contract with the parties that are going to do the work. And so we're hoping to do that within the next 30 days because we want to get their visit to Carson City hopefully in the spring so that they can get the work done. Hopefully we can arrange for the consultants to be before the commission if the timing is right. And I believe the work has to be completed by, I believe, June 30th. So I think we're on track at this time, but we need to make sure we just hit all our dates.
Thank you, Jen. Any commission member questions? We'll go to G, staff reports, non-action items. G1, commissioner reports or comments. Any commission member reports?
Very exciting websites. You want to follow this project. We're calling this Nevada's Working Capital with an AL. That's a little play on words for money, obviously, working capital. Nevada's with an S, no apostrophe, nevadasworkingcapital.com. And the portal that gives you a kind of an overview of everything that we're doing relative to economic development and development in the downtown is downtownanswers.com. And you can get to Nevada's Working Capital that way also, so we have a link. I'm going to pass around just kind of a Q&A question and answer to some of portions of the project. We continue to try to get as much of the information out, and frequently asked questions is a great way to try to summarize what's going on. And then there's another addition. I think I added another piece there, too. The library director and the library board and all of the institutions that provide educational opportunities for K through 16. We're looking at an educational collaborative with them because this will have an educational component in the library that will serve the entire community, both our public school systems, our charter school systems, our private schools and the like. So Sarah's reaching out to all of them. They'll have the library be an opportunity for them to take advantage of the new space.
Thank you, Joe. I did give Jen a CD of this PowerPoint. They're all TIFFs that are in there. And if you want to throw that on as a link to it, we can start celebrating the history of that as part of the whole process.
I just want to say thank you it was very interesting, and I like to feel all the energy going on, so look forward to being more involved in whatever that means for John Q. Citizen.
Greg, thank you. Telling the backstory is probably the most fun on this project, and seeing how an institution that's been in operation since the late 50s, early 60s in Carson City has been kind of an anchor institution to all of us around here, and how it is taking the lead now in a way that's so unique to help us look at different ways of doing business. It's fascinating.
Any other questions, comments? Any public comment? Jen? You don't want to weigh into this committee. It's just the board.
Well, I can make a comment. You know,
I've made a discussion about or a comment before about maybe a Carson City History Museum or a county museum, and I don't know if that should be pushed by this commission or in conjunction with the Carson City Cultural Commission at this point in time, or where to start that, but I think this is a good opportunity with the generosity of the late Adams family members and things like that maybe we can get something like this off the ground.
Any other public comment? Thank you very much, Joe.
Thank you.
Next item is F4, discussion only regarding an update of certified local government grant 32-09-21834, parentheses 2, historic structures report for the Brewery Arts Center and the Performance Hall. Jen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. City staff, we've been working with the state regarding the funding agreement, and actually there was a minor change at the recommendation of the district attorney's office that we've been working with SHPO, and this afternoon Rebecca provided us with the amended funding agreement. So at this time, once that funding agreement is signed, then we will be able to enter into a contract with the parties that are going to do the work. And so we're hoping to do that within the next 30 days because we want to get their visit to Carson City hopefully in the spring so that they can get the work done. Hopefully we can arrange for the consultants to be before the commission if the timing is right. And I believe the work has to be completed by, I believe, June 30th. So I think we're on track at this time, but we need to make sure we just hit all our dates.
Thank you, Jen. Any commission member questions? We'll go to G, staff reports, non-action items. G1, commissioner reports or comments. Any commission member reports, comments? I got an email from Alice Baldrica today requesting applications for Historic Preservation Month for projects or activities. There's actually a little application form they're going to try to take, or put a poster together, I guess, for the state that outlines all the different activities, so that they would like to have that by the end of March, I think. So it's something we should think about. We need to be thinking about our preservation awards, which we'll give to the Board of Supervisors for their May meeting, and we'll certainly make that part of the State Preservation Month activities. So those are things. Maybe next meeting, Jen, we can agendize that item. Any other reports, comments? Planning Division staff report. Jen?
The only thing that I have to add, Mr. Chairman, is the next HRC meeting will be March 11th, and we've included in your packet the schedule for 2010. If you don't have it, it is on the HRC website also. And at that time, we will have a presentation for you regarding the 2009 HRC report, an annual report that will be required to go before the Board of Supervisors, hopefully in the second meeting or the third Thursday in March. So we will have a report for you.
Okay, thanks, Jen. Future agenda items, just talked about historic preservation awards. I did talk to Ron James after our December meeting about putting together National Register district nominations. He said that with the way the state budget is and the way his office is working, he would really appreciate us putting that together for him. So I think that's a worthy CLG grant, and he said there would not be a problem if it was funded through CLG. So that's something we may want to consider for our next round of CLG funding and try to get that going. I'd like to make sure we get a lot of public input on that as we're doing it too. So it's another item I'd like to get on the agenda. Any other agenda items commissioners would like to see? Hearing none, we'll move to H, action on adjournment. I'll entertain a motion.
I move that we adjourn.
Motion, second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We're adjourned. Thank you.